The best thing is, though, is when Dick Durbin, speaking of him, when he pretends that he's really concerned about violence in our cities, because, again, that should be the focus of federal authorities when that has an interstate component to it.
The city of Chicago, the gun violence situation there is intolerable. Intolerable. And we're not the only city in America by any means that's facing this. We need to have your assurance that there is a concerted, determined effort to deal with gun violence at the federal level, coordinating our effort with the state and local officials.
I have a question. Why are Texas cities in localities and Florida cities and localities and Vermont cities and localities not dealing with a proportional gun problem? A gun violence problem. Why is that?
Yeah, and they always use the word gun violence, that phrase.
Oh, no,
gun
yeah.
violence, because it's about the guns and not the violence.
Well, how about the criminality? How about when they went into Bottega Veneta and 3 days in a row stole all those purses? Oh, that's just... are we still calling that consumer reparations? Joining us now, I'm delighted he's with us, Matt Rosenberg, his book, What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son. Matt's a... a longtime Chicago resident and family, of course, longtime ties to the great Windy City. Matt's mad for good reason, and he's been hearing this commentary and the snippets from this DOJ hearing on Capitol Hill. Matt, congrats on the book, my friend. What do we make of the targeting of parents while letting the leadership of these big urban liberal run areas off scot-free from responsibility?
I think we really first have to turn the focus on, you know, 5 or 6 decades of progressive democratic rule of our big cities like Chicago. When I was a kid growing up here in the 1960s and 70s, this was a safe city, a thriving city, a city of opportunity, a city that worked despite the beginnings of serious institutional corruption even back then. Now, you know, it's a 24/7 unreality show. You were talking about high-end boutiques being cleaned out. Michigan Avenue, the Magnificent Mile, one of our landmark areas, you know, this Christmas, it's a shell of its former self. Stores are empty. You don't know what's going to happen down there at any moment. Armed robbery crews might jump out of a carjacked SUV and relieve a dozen people of their wallets and phones. They might bust into Bottega Veneta and clear, you know, $40,000 worth of purses off the shelves just like that. That's just the tip of the iceberg. If you're down on the south side or out on the west side, it's even worse than that. So the schools are broken. The courts are broken. The public employee pension debt is skyrocketing. It's in huge disarray here. And it's sad because this city has a lot of greatness wrapped into its DNA and a lot of people who are actually trying to make things work.
Well, what is so sad, and I don't want to focus on the sadness for too long, but as you said, these cities are such beautiful places, so rich with history, architectural wonders, amazing restaurateurs, you know, at least before the pandemic killed off a lot of them, but great immigrant ethnic neighborhoods and businesses, just wonderful people. But until you vote for new leadership and get this leadership out, you're just going to keep getting the same thing. And again, I point to Baltimore. Nancy Pelosi's family started their political career, of course, mayor of Baltimore. A long, rich history of Democrat corruption in Baltimore. It's only gotten worse and worse, year after year, worse and worse and worse, because you have white flight, then you have black flight from these cities, and what's left is just people who essentially have given up or so rich that they don't really care. They just go along with who's ever in power because they'll get some breaks or some benefits. So it's a vicious cycle.
Well, I think really what I see here is that, you know, we do have to, Laura, articulate the policy and political ways out of this mess. It's important to articulate those, but I think it's absolutely correct. We can't pin our hopes on a political or policy solution to what's gone wrong in the great American cities. So you sort of have to dial back to this land beyond politics. And that is what I had a chance to explore along with the policy playbook, what I think the new policy playbook ought to be when I was researching this book. So I moved into Bridgeport from where five Irish mayors have come. Mm-hmm. And I took the bus and the CTA Red Line down deeper into the South Side, mm-hmm. Well past Hyde Park, where I grew up,
yep,
and into Englewood, into Roseland, into all kinds of places. I talked to Black people in their homes and workplaces, and I saw things that were encouraging. And, you know, I heard, for instance, from a young man named Jesse Mack, who grew up at 61st in Wabash, gunfire in the night, low-rise project, a poor K-8 school he was forced to attend, a plain vanilla Chicago public school, a public charter high school, made a huge difference in his life. So did his mother, who really watched over whom he associated with and took him to church regularly. So now here he is, 28-year-old Black man, working as the chief development officer for Urban Prep Charter Schools, with an MBA from DePaul University, and it didn't come easy. He got rejected the first time he applied to the program. He kept trying. He got in. He worked. He worked all day and took classes at night. He's one example of the difference that family and faith can make. Mm. And I came across numerous other examples. And even things like a micro-lending program where now Black ex-convicts are starting their own delivery companies with loans of, 20-40K a pop by one or two Sprinter vans. And people love to bash Amazon. You know, it's the new national sport, right? We had the Chicago Teachers Union announce in a tweet not so long ago, they fully supported a demonstration where a guillotine was being displayed outside of Jeff Bezos's home. Well, here's the thing. There are new Amazon distribution centers popping up all over Chicago. And so a number of these Black ex-convicts that are now starting their own delivery companies are serving the Amazon economy. And of course, we all use it every day. So there's a flip side to a lot of the rhetoric that's out there. And there's a hidden awareness of conservative values, faith and family, hard work, investment and saving that I saw all over the Black South Side of Chicago. So when we look at BLM, when we look at that Chicago area BLM spokesperson who, after the rioting downtown in August of 2020, said, hey, if you've got a loot to put food on the table, go for it. It's legit. You look at that rhetoric and you look at what people are really saying and thinking in the hood, and there's just a vast, vast gulf between the two.
Plenty of African Americans have written about this and spoken very eloquently about this. And as you said, it crosses mm-hmm. racial and ethnic lines. I mean, you just so happen to have more, you know, impediments to success if you don't have a male role model in your life. And it's hard to do the patchwork thing. It's hard to do, it takes a village. I mean, it does take a village. I mean, I'm a single parent and I have means. Thank the good Lord, I have means. I feel mm-hmm. so heartbroken for the people who cannot, you know, cannot manage to find that balance. I'm not saying I'm perfect, believe me, I'm not, but it's a hard, even with some of the means, to make sure you have that presence in your children's lives. It's very tough, but the society itself, as we know, Matt, is dissuading the culture. You know, it sounds so the culture, but the culture is certainly not encouraging marriage at all. Nothing in the culture really is encouraging marriage today.
young men particularly are adrift of all colors. They face all kinds of challenges. I think it's very challenging. And you look at what's really needed. It's not just the love and the attention and the discipline going to the point of future success and preparedness. I mean, we know, for example, educational data tell us that vocabulary introduction is a huge thing. I mean, this has been written about even in the Washington Post. So you think of a kid whose dad isn't around, whose mom may sadly all too often be on drugs or engaged in other activities and have no presence. He's growing up in a neighborhood where the closest thing to a family is a gang. So that's the first level of correction. But, you know, even if you're checking the boxes and a parent or two parents are present and making a decent effort, what about vocabulary? What about learning preparedness? That kind of thing is huge, and it's very basic, but it's not happening. And so we end up with educational performance data in the public schools of places like Detroit and Chicago and Cleveland and a dozen or two dozen other cities where the student population as a whole in the public schools is doing very, very poorly, but the student population of Black and Latino students is doing dramatically worse, so that you end up with, you know, 13 or 14% of Black students in Chicago actually reaching the proficiency level in math and reading in fourth and eighth grade, both in the National Assessment of Educational Progress. So it's not just that parenting and two-parent families becomes a reach, partly because of the culture, as you point out, Laura. It's also that taking it to the next level of learning preparedness is something that's increasingly not happening. So it's no wonder that school choice has become an ever bigger issue, and it's no wonder that more and more minority families are turning not only to charter schools in Chicago, which are not a silver bullet, but do pretty darn well, but they're also turning to private schools. And we have one more strand of hope here in a state tax credit program called Invest in Kids that remarkably the Democratic majority in Springfield, our state capital, allowed to be born into a five-year pilot program. And now the question is whether it will be made permanent. But there's a great deal of private money now being stimulated for donations to scholarship-granting organizations for minority kids who end up going to Catholic or other religious schools.
Nice.
And yeah, it's a great program. And our billionaire Democratic governor, J.B. Pritzker, has twice tried to kneecap it, and twice.
Of course.
And this gives me hope too, Laura. Twice he's been beaten back by minority parents and students who've gone down to the state capitol and lobbied Democratic legislators. So this tells me, and we talked about this another time, although it's a long shot to pin our hopes on politics and a political turnaround, because after all, as you pointed out, we keep asking for more of the same kinds of leaders. Nonetheless, though, when minority parents and students showed up in Springfield, they managed to influence Democratic state legislators on this particular matter. So this tells me that if we could see some sort of bottom-up political undertaking here in Chicago, a rebranding even of, I'm just blue-skying here, spitballing totally, but how about a Chicago Reform Party? Now, we have nonpartisan elections, but that hasn't stopped the Democratic Socialists of America from running a slate and now having six council members versus one in 2019. So, you know, we see the direction things are going on the Chicago City Council. But on the flip side, we see that minority parents can influence Democratic legislators this way. So I say there's something here.
There's
we need
hope.
To.
There's some hope.
Yeah, we need to stoke this a little bit,
all right,
somehow or other.
Yeah, this is a good place to close and a sign of hope. Matt Rosenberg, the book is What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Native Son with Solutions, Not Just Complaints. And you can never give up on America and never give up on great American cities and the good people who still live there. Matt, thank you so much and congrats again on the book.
Thank you, Laura. It's been a pleasure.